Welcome to Post Carbon Radio. Today is February 27th, 2017, and today we are continuing our series on getting active in the Trump era. In our last two shows, we talked about local organizing in Marin and Sonoma counties and a bit about strategy for progressive movements from the local to the national levels. At the end of the show today, we're going to have an update on bills coming up before the California State Senate, so you might want to get a pencil for that. But today we're going to step back a bit and talk about what it takes to become politically active and how those just awakening to political action can best navigate this political landscape. We have three guests today, all published authors and activists. On the phone, we have Sharon Weil. Am I saying it right, Sharon?
Sharon Weil.
And we have Claire Hope Cummings.
And in Hi.
And in studio, we have Carrie Nelson.
Well, Sharon Weil
has long been engaged in the conversation about courage and change as an author, activist, award-winning filmmaker, and somatic educator. She's author of the novel Donnie and Ursula Save the World, a quirky political romantic mishap adventure. She is also host of the acclaimed podcast Passing for Normal, conversations with authors, artists, activists, and awakeners about seeding change in the world. Sharon lives in Los Angeles and is an advocate for social justice and the natural world through supporting solutions to climate change, community arts, and holistic health and healing. We'll be talking about her new book, Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. Welcome to Post Carbon Radio, Sharon.
Oh, thank you so much, Bing and Karen. Great to be here.
Great. And also joining us on the phone from San Rafael, we have Claire Hope Cummings. Claire is an award-winning author, broadcast journalist, and environmental lawyer. Her stories are about connecting people, place, and plants, and respect for the ancient wisdom of traditional land-based cultures. She is the author of Uncertain Peril, Genetic Engineering, and the Future of Seeds. And currently, Claire Hope Cummings is a member of a group called Wise Words that's searching deeper into these turbulent times about how we do community. Welcome, Claire.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be with you.
And we're joined in the studio by Carrie Nelson. Carrie is the author of One Small Difference, Step into Action for a Better World. She grew up in San Francisco and graduated from Peace and Conflict Studies and Library and Information Studies at UC Berkeley. Inspired by social justice movements, for two decades she consulted, volunteered, and advocated with nonprofits, unions, and individuals in the U.S., Southern Africa, and the U.K. She works part-time as a retreat manager at Spirit Rock Meditation Center and offers One Small Difference and One Small Planet workshops. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you, Bing and Karin.
Well, it hardly needs to be said, but of course, one context of this conversation is the Trump administration, whose intentions seem to be taking us backwards, eradicating many of the progressive gains we've made over the years towards not only economic and social justice, but also protecting our Mother Earth from climate chaos, the subject of our show. But in response to this rollback, we're seeing a new wave of people wanting to become politically involved, sometimes with some political experience, but often without much political background.
And one thing that unites all of you, aside from being authors, is that you are all long committed activists. So we're grateful you are here to share the wisdom you've gleaned from your past work with our listeners about how to jump in and face the current rapid fire pace of rollbacks. Sharon, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your new book, Changeability, and how it evolved from your podcast, which you say involves strategies for inspiring change and implementing courage. I feel the book is so relevant in these turbulent times we're living in navigating change with ease.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. I've always been very interested in change and just the nature of change and what is it that that allows us to respond to change, whether it's personal change or public change, social action, with more flexibility and ease and less overwhelm and less freeze, which is what we are, so many of us are experiencing right now in the face of all that's coming from this new administration. And so I set out to talk to change makers. I interviewed over 25 change makers on my podcast called Passing for Normal, and including Claire Hope Cummings, who I'm very happy to be on this show with, and many other of your West Marin luminaries, to ask them, you know, how it is that they approach change, and not only how they approach change, but how is it that you're brave? How is it that you are able to stand up to the forces that be and to enact change? And from that, I started hearing common things, common principles, in fact, that emerged to the point where I was able to arrive at 7 principles that were common to all change scenarios, whether you're initiating a change or whether you're adapting to an existing change. And I found them to be true across the board. And so this book speaks into those principles, as well as using extensive excerpts from the podcast from all of these very wise change makers illustrating what we're talking about.
Well, how do you define changeability, Sharon?
Well, I define changeability as the ability to effectively meet change with more flexibility and ease. Because, you know, change is a given, right? You know, the nature of our life is change, and change is always moving. It's always evolving and transforming from one state to another, to another, to another, and moving more like a spiral than a circle. You know, when people say, oh, it comes back full circle, well, it never really does come back full circle, because change is always evolving. And so, you know, I find that so many people in these modern times, and this was even before the Trump administration, but it's just been so amplified since then, people get overwhelmed when faced with complex change. And so this book was meant to provide ways for people to find ways to more easily adapt and initiate change as it comes.
Well, I also know that you teach continuum, a form of movement. And how does it relate to change? I relate to Tai Chi Chuan, my own practice, and Qigong. I think it's very similar in that it teaches us to be like water, fluid, flexible, and adapt to the situation and be resilient. And as a martial art, trains one to flow with the opponent's force and not meet force with force. So tell us a little bit about continuum.
Right. It's a perfect example. So continuum also is based on the premise that we are primarily fluid beings, that, you know, depending upon our age, we're anywhere from 80 to, you know, 75% water. And it is the fluid in our tissues that actually is the agent of change. And so continuum uses breath, and it uses sound, and it uses certain kinds of undulating wave movements to help us align with the ongoing movement of nature and our nature. And so if you, just like you're saying in Tai Chi, if you are looking at change as moving, and if you want to use it, you know, to be moving like water, right, you know, sometimes that water is moving, it's wild, it's turbulent, it's, you know, got big standing waves. Sometimes it's stagnant, it feels like it's never going to move, nothing's ever going to happen. And, so it's really helpful to look at change, look at whatever change is going on with me, whether it's internal change, personal change, or change that's going on outside of me in the environment, in terms of movement, and looking at it in terms of the movement of water is a good way to picture it so that you can feel how to align with the existing movement of change. One of the things that I'm saying in this book is that we're most effective in meeting change when we can identify the existing movement of change. What is the nature of the change that's going on? And how can I best align with it with the least amount of resistance being the forces, whether they're internal or external, that tend to impede the movement of change. So how can I best align with the existing movement of change is a lot of what this book is trying to help convey.
And so you actually embody that in your movement, and it's not just in your head.
That's right, and that's, you know, that's a real way to really know something. You know, the primary first order of experience. How do I really know what I know? I sense it. I feel it in my breath. I feel it in my tissues. That's how I know. It's not right. It's not an abstract idea. It is based on my own experience. And truly, that is the way most people, whether they call it their intuition or whether they call it, you know, some other kind of sensory base of knowing, it's how we know what we know, is in the body and through embodiment.
Well, I've been very concerned about all of us people that are resisting Trump and how we're overloaded with information and technology and just the daily barrages of outrage and protest. Can you summarize what you've learned from artists, activists, and awakeners about how to navigate change with ease, to face our fears and challenges, and how do we maintain our equilibrium mentally and emotionally, equanimity, balance, calmness, and composure?
That's a tall order. But I think it really has to do with finding a daily practice of refreshing and renewing yourself and refreshing and renewing your hope or your purpose, right? You know, I find that most of the time when people change, and again, I'm talking about a personal change or I'm talking about a social change, people sometimes think that they're changing because they're afraid, right? They're afraid of something bad's going to happen. But really, the real reason why we make change is we make change on behalf of what or who we love. And so to be able to reframe it, to be able to really ask yourself, what is it that I love above all? What is it that I value above all? And even thinking about love instead of thinking about fear starts to soften your tissue, gives you a warm feeling inside. And so to pursue love, the love of the land, the love of freedom, the love of my community, you know, to pursue it in that way can keep refreshing me to face the steps that I have to face that are challenging and everyday challenging. You know, the scattershot of how this administration is, you know, putting out this directive and that directive and, you know, has people running over here and running over there and running over there. We're exhausting ourselves in response. And so it's about, you know, every day finding my breath, finding my body, finding, remembering what it is I love and what I value, and choosing what I can do. You know, what's important, what's most important in this moment, what's most important right now. I hope that answers to some extent.
Well, let's see. From interviewing all these artists and activists and awakeners, you've derived seven principles for change. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. So there's seven principles that are common, whether we're adapting to existing change, something that's thrown at us, or whether we're using these principles to initiate change. And these principles are like a wheel. They're interactive. They're not separate. But I found that within any change scenario, we need to bring awareness, listen deeply, find community, which means find support and find help in any way, proceed incrementally, which means perhaps having to do with the pace that you're moving or having to do with just breaking down larger tasks into smaller bite-sized pieces. Align with nature has to do with proper timing, has to do with aligning with the seasons or aligning with the movement of water like we were talking about. Have hope and spark fire, which really speaks to your compelling reason why. whenever we're making a change, we have to have a good reason. And if we're not making the change, or if our fears about making the change, or our resistance, our denial, or procrastination is larger than our actions, we need to strengthen, we need to actually fire up our compelling reason, whether it's through passion, whether it's through anger, whether it's through lust or eros. We have to actually spark fire to get a change going. So bring awareness, listen deeply, find community, proceed incrementally, align with nature, have hope, and spark fire.
And if you're just joining us, that is the voice of Sharon Weil. She is the author of Changeability, and she's the first of three guests we have today to talk about getting active in the Trump era and sort of maintaining our equanimity while we do that. So this sounds like a wonderful framework to think about keeping your energy steady and flowing, as you were talking about, Bing. Did you want to ask a follow-up? Those seven great steps, I'm sure there's a lot more detail in your book.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about community, because we here in West Marin are providing people with that community of like-minded people to resist Trump. And we've formed a group that's taking shape just now. It's West Marin Standing Together, a local group resisting Trump. And we're having another meeting at the Dance Palace on Saturday, March 4th at 3 o'clock. So I hope listeners in West Marin will join us.
If I lived in West Marin, I would be there.
Great. Well, Sharon, this is Karin. And I'm just wondering, in the framework that you developed, what did you find that people were most stuck with?
Where are they most stuck?
Yeah.
Find community. I find that, you know, so when in offering these seven principles, I'm inviting people to look at whatever change scenario they're in and to see what of these seven may be missing or they may need more of in order to get the movement of change moving once again or moving more. So people are stuck. It's because it's not moving. And I find community. It's like people, Even when we join with others, people seem to feel like they have to do it themselves. Mm. And or we're in it by myself. I mean, one of the amazing things about the Women's March, you know, here in Los Angeles, they were expecting about 60,000 people, and they had over 750,000 people in downtown L.A. Mm. It was amazing. And people could look around and go, oh, my God, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And the reaching out for help, and not just in terms of, you know, body, but for whatever you're doing, whatever you're going through, even in this time, if you're feeling afraid, if you're feeling threatened, if you're feeling overwhelmed, to reach out for help, to find support. And sometimes support is also a spiritual practice, a physical practice, right? It's not just asking people, but what supports you that whenever you're making a change, you actually need more support than you did before? Because it's challenging, it's difficult, it's new, you're facing the unknown. And so I find community is the biggest missing piece, and I would say that perhaps the next one is proceed incrementally, meaning that people are always jumping ahead, right? They're always jumping ahead. Our eyes are bigger than our stomach. We set large goals for ourselves. And we get very disappointed when change doesn't move in the way or in the pace that we hope it does.
Well, I wholeheartedly recommend your book, Sharon, to read to meet the challenges of change in these challenging, turbulent times. And the book is called Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change.
So, Claire, Sharon, we're glad you're going to stay with us, and I'm sure you'll have a chance to hop in the conversation, but we're going to jump to Claire for a minute now. Claire, you've worked on many issues from many perspectives, as a lawyer, as a journalist, and activist for many years, and now you're doing Wise Words. What is Wise Words?
Oh, thank you. It's very similar to what Sharon's been talking about, and I want to start by highly recommending her book as well. You know, we didn't really take a look at how we do what we do. We've been so busy putting out fires and responding and reacting and doing the best we can. But this really gives us an opportunity to think deeply about social transformation, where it begins. So, excuse me, Wise Words is a group of people in West Marin wanting to take some time out. We're all busy in the doing and the activism part, too. But we wanted to take a look at how we do what we do. Some of the things that Sharon was mentioning are some of the considerations we're newly forming, and we haven't really decided on a particular focus. But I want to mention that as we talk about how do we find community, right? How do we? Is there a we? I mean, we kind of assume there's a we. Either it's the group in the room together, or it's the people listening on to this show, and you guys. And a lot of times we don't stop to ask the question of we just keep going with that collective idea, and we don't ask the question of who we are as individuals and what we bring to that group. And so this is where the importance of story comes in, and we can talk about how story plays into our thinking and to our assumptions and to our, it informs our belief systems, but it also is the basis of our identity. And if we can start conversations about what we want to do and how we want to do it with revealing ourselves, talking about where we came from and what our experience base is, then that sense of sharing our personal identity and identifying with each other and offering maybe a little of vulnerability. I really don't know how to do this, but I can learn, you know, to be able to say, what's going on in the world right now is frightening to me, and I need the support of the people in this room. So all of these little elements of speaking, really beginning, as Sharon said, incrementally, I'd say the first step to do it is to share our own personal stories, who we are, where we come from, and then build a sense of trust with each other and a sense of identity, a collective identity that can then start making the decisions about how to act more effectively. I did a 2-year study on why the environmental movement in particular is not being effective. We haven't been reaching our goals, and I wanted to know why. And actually, the Leah Fund and Sharon and other people in West Marin were really helpful with that study. And I came up with a lot of conclusions about that, but one of them was that we focus so much on what we're supposed to do and how we're going to do it, and we get really kind of competitive about my issue is more important than your issue or my way of doing it. You know, we want to have the legislation or we want to have litigation or public education, and we end up kind of spending a lot of time competitively on that, and rather than on being doing the work we need to do to build community. And these 7 principles that Sharon's been talking about would work perfectly if we could just take those and sit down and ask how each group is, you know, that's doing the actions that we want to have done, but kind of step back for a minute and ask how these principles can help us do what we do in a better way. And that we come out not exhausted and depleted from the work, but energized and, you know, more about what we talked about, that we have that balance between the doing and the being, so to speak. I know that's pretty vague, but everything from when we work on the land, if we're gardeners or farmers or hikers or whatever, how does that engage us also in our social actions? So we start knitting together these parts of our lives and each other into something more cohesive and coherent. I think that'll make us far more effective than we have been.
What I notice, what it really strikes me about your remarks, Claire, is the word time. You said that if we don't do it right, we end up being competitive and spending a lot of time competing with each other. Because when you first started talking, I thought, you know, that's really great to be grounded in the ways you're describing. In your own authentic experience and skills and awareness of that and of other people's. And then I thought, in the Trump era, you know, as Sharon was mentioning, every day we wake up at some new crazy challenge. And so there's a temptation, I imagine, to just jump in and start doing the work and not do this sort of, I'm calling it grounding, maybe you use another term. But it sounds like you're saying that it really pays off and that you're in it for the long haul and that therefore it's worth it to invest this time up front.
Well, I learned this from my work with Native people, that Native people, Indigenous people, traditional Indigenous people, don't work as single individuals. They work both individually and tribally. And the mechanisms by which you can identify yourself both as an individual and as part of something bigger are really important for, I think, for us to learn. Because if we're just a group of people acting individually, maybe in concert, but we're all sort of, you know, self-identified. We're in, you know, this individualism that we see so much of right now, I think, is part of the structural problem of why we're not as effective. Social media, I think, and Sharon gets into this in the book too, I think that social media is actually it's wonderful for organizing and for spreading information, but I think it sort of emphasizes selfishness and self-centeredness and individuality. And we keep mentioning this word community, and I think Sharon alluded to this and something other longtime activists say, we really don't know how to do community. What DAPL activists are saying is we have to work intersectionality. We have to have intersectionality, meaning we have to find ways for our various interests and skills and abilities and desires to kind of work together towards even having a cohesive strategy. And we're kind of floundering around on doing that. So it gets a lot easier just to show up at a march or sign a petition or, you know, listen in a group. But taking those next steps to really seeing how power is operating in our society deeply, you know, Bannon has no compunctions about misusing power. But we do, you know, we don't want to come up with some kind of authoritarian regime to get our skills and, I mean, get our values implemented, right? Mm-hmm. Well, how do we do it then? How do we both resist, you know, what is going on and then implement our own vision? And I think that we're not there yet. I think we need to take the time. We have to do these other things. We have to do them simultaneously. But to not, let me put it more in the positive. To take the time to reflect on these deeper social transformational issues will help us in all that we do. And eventually, I think, we might engage in the kind of change that we all would prefer take place, not just so much on the political level, but all the way down to the personal, into the earth, you know, at all levels of how we experience life on earth.
Like full spectrum change. Well,
exactly.
While we contemplate that, we're going to have to take a little break. So let's hold on just a minute.
Yeah, you're listening to KWMR, Community Radio for West Marin.
So, Claire, we were in the middle of your thought. Did we let you finish your thought on wise words and where this journey is going?
So on a practical level, wise words is a group of people, and we're sorting this out, you know, these kinds of things that I referred to. So we want to get around to, I think what we're going to do next is share our stories, learn from the Native tradition of identifying ourselves to each other, and looking at questions of how we do that. And story is a great way to do it, either your personal story or, Lordy, there's so many wonderful stories out there about how story functions in society. Because, you know, what story does is kind of gets away from the telling each other what to do, and I'm right, and here's what you need to do next, and all this other stuff that we do here amongst ourselves, and it gives us opportunity to say, well, here's what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, and then at the larger level, mythology talks about greater forces that have been at work in human existence throughout time, and we can say, what are the lessons that we're learned? You know, how can we apply these to what we're trying to do now? So it's just an opportunity to step back and actually think on a collective level. And then I think we have not come up yet with an idea for how we would apply that beyond the group of people who are thinking and reading and studying together. But we hope to, because we want to support West Marin Standing Together. We want to support all the groups that are working so hard to bring about practical change.
Well, that's great. That was one of the questions we had of sort of how your group was going to relate to other groups, and now you've just told us. So we are now going to bring Carrie Nelson into the conversation. Carrie, we want to get your perspective. You are also a longtime activist who has worked in multiple continents and countries. And for full disclaimer, Carrie and I have co-founded affinity groups in the Bay Area in the past, so we're friends. And now, Carrie, you are reawakening a group that you and I were members of years ago, right after the 9/11 attacks, right?
That's right, yeah.
And we'll get to affinity groups as one way for people to join up and become active. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about your book, One Small Difference. You started this book long before Trump was even a candidate, right?
Very long before.
So what motivated you to write this book?
What did motivate me? So I think it was both personal and sort of an attempt to come out and understand. It was basically, actually, let me just go back to the logistical, because many years ago, my friend Jocelyn and I were part of we co-facilitated a workshop together. And it was called Creative Activism, and its intention was basically to help people start to make a difference. And the book is, that was sort of the seed of this book, because after we had done a few workshops together, we sort of checked in. We weren't quite sure what we were doing next. And I said, I'm going to go write down a few ideas. And, 12, 13, 14 years later, here's the product. But I also have been recognizing how much the book has been an exploration of my own frustrations, confusion. Mm-hmm. What should I focus on? Why do I never do enough? And so it's an outgrowth of that.
Yeah, that was actually one of the next questions I was going to ask you, which I also asked Sharon, which is, what are some of the common barriers that you see and that you address in your book? So Sharon was talking about, community and difficulties actually finding and forming that. And you just mentioned difficulty choosing what to work on. That's a barrier. What else?
Yeah, no. Sharon, both of you also mentioned overwhelm. Issues with, people don't like activists, So it's like you have an idea of what you think activism is, and you think you're supposed to be that in order to make change. And so you don't become, you don't get involved for those kinds of reasons,
because it doesn't seem to be like you or your personality or the way you like to approach others.
Yeah. Well, or you just don't identify with the culture that you have, said is what activism is.
Mm-hmm.
Other issues are feeling like you don't know enough to become active yourself. So you believe that you're not somebody who has anything to contribute. And, the shadow of of the judge that kind of follows all of us around from time to time, no matter what we're doing.
And what do you say to that judge?
Well, the judge is an interesting tool to work with. So I say thank you to the judge for what she is constantly teaching me. Can I share three points that I kind of start the book off with? Because I feel like if there's one message I would want to get across, it actually is these three things, and they relate very much to what the other two guests were talking about. Also to frame the workbook, it really is a book to help people take action. And it was written with that intent to take away the excuse of, I don't know what to do. And so it's very much gives a step-by-step, small steps approach to becoming active. With that context, what I suggest to folks is, basically do something no matter how small, no matter how brief. So this is, again, just to kind of get you going, to connect with at least one other person who wants to engage, whatever it is you want to engage, and to understand that you are human and that your energy, interests, and abilities to engage are going to wax and wane over time. So don't try to be the superhuman ideal engager. Be who you are. And so I feel this really fits in with what other folks were just saying. And also, that's a great way to work with the judge.
Yeah. And so do you feel like the things that hold people back, the barriers, I guess that's my personal focus today, has that changed with Trump's election? Are people overcoming some of those barriers? Or what are you seeing in terms of, like, new activists coming out?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I think it feels like when I think of people I'm talking to who are new activists, or they might not call themselves activists, let's put it that way, but people who are making calls to their the members of Congress and all, I'm just struck by it's a point of no return. It's like there is no other way. So we've been hit with such a wall. You know, they are confronted with such an intense reality. They don't see any option except to bypass any judges they have. Mm. So I think that awakening is, you know, that's a huge strength that we all get to play with and, you know, jump off from now.
I see it happening all over the country with indivisible groups and people confronting their members of Congress. I find it real heartening that so many people are wanting to be engaged.
Yeah.
So like that spark that Sharon was talking about is kind of overruling the judge, right?
Yeah, yeah. That urgency, an inner urgency.
So what else? You're really focused on these steps, and it was interesting to me because when I first heard about the book, I sort of thought, well, this is something that a person can sit alone and do in their room. But we're talking about community, and one of the first things you said was connecting with at least one other person. So let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, I mean, so for the same reason, groups are supportive, individuals are supportive. And I think it's enough to actually have one other person. So I don't know if you're wanting me to go into affinity group now, but...
Sure.
You know, I mean, essentially, if you have the support of another person, you're more likely to act, you're more likely to enjoy it, to learn, you know, you have a fallback with you can set up regular times to meet. There's so much good in that, and you're going to have more fun. I mean, seriously.
That's community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bing, what's your experience been with this group coming together? Is it all people you already knew, or there's some new people?
No. I'm meeting more and more people in the community, and like I said, I'm so heartened by the response of people coming out and wanting to be engaged. We had a meeting over our house with the Immigration Protection Committee, and I think there were 25 people there. And just seeing civic engagement in action, democracy in action, and it's very exciting because I see this as all a big experiment, figuring out how to do this, and I see people are coming with their gifts and contributing them and things just coming together out of this community.
And where's the, like, people telling their story part of it that Claire was talking about? You all are so busy. I was so amazed by the committees you have formed and the issues you're taking on. You know which congressional committees and who the reps are on them. Mm-hmm. Have you had time for any of that personal sharing in the meetings as well?
Well, I'm a member of Wise Words, too, and I see it as kind of the heart and soul, perhaps, of the whole group that can give us some good stories, as Claire has said. And, hey, Claire and Sharon, would you like to jump in?
Sure. I'm very intrigued about this idea about story. You know, I think sometimes it's very helpful to ask ourselves, what is the story that I'm in? What is the story? Whose story is this? Who's directing this story? And what is the story I'm in? I mean, when I'm writing a book or something, I'm always asking myself that question. And so to kind of look at this whole situation right now to ask, what is the story here? What is it? And, you know, like any good thriller, it's got twists and turns and oh my gosh, and just when you think it can't get any worse, then it does. And, you know, it's like, what is the story?
How does that
find to be helpful?
Yeah, what that makes me think of on a less narrative and more abstract level is the work of George Lakoff, who talks about framing, that, you know, that Trump engages in this strategy of preemptive framing where he puts the story out there first, and that sets the framework of discussion, which we know always is, you know, sets the political limitations that we're talking about. And unless somebody tells a different story or questions the premises of the story, then we start debating the finer points and we're still within that narrative. Is that part of the same approach? Or are you talking about the story that you want to live in?
No, well, there's that too. You know, when you're visioning, when you're creating a vision or you're creating a dream and trying to achieve that. But no, I'm talking about right now when we're looking at this you know, nightmare that we're in, it's like to ask, well, what is the story that I'm in? What is this story? And, you know, in terms of framing, I think that one of the ways in which we renew hope, that we continually renew hope, is by reframing. Mm-hmm. You know, when we are able to look at something differently than we've ever looked at it before, you know, when we're able to have a different perspective, a wider perspective, a more heartful perspective, it actually changes everything. It can lift our fears. It can put us at ease, or it can be the thing that cues us into, oh, therefore this is the action I need to take. Now I know the action that I need to take because I see the story differently.
The phrase, a more heartful perspective, makes me want to bring Carrie back in, because Carrie, you not only work at Spirit Rock, but you also have a personal practice, right? You're a meditator.
Sure.
So does that resonate with you, or in what ways does your spiritual practice and awareness affect your own activism and the method you used in the book?
Yeah. So what I can share, I really did resonate with, I forget who talked about, so what I can share is that it really resonates for me to do action as practice. I've actually created a workshop called Climate Action as Practice. So where we're actually, I think it was Sharon who mentioned, you know, integrating nature, of course, being in nature, and just simple awareness practice, like recognizing when we're taking action and appreciating that we are constantly taking action. Mm-hmm. So like even when you're sending just an email, oh, this is actually participating. Because I think, again, so often people come from the place of not doing enough, mm-hmm. and not feeling good enough at what they do. And so it's kind of a constant reminder that, oh, we are in this flow, and that, again, I think Sharon was saying, you know, we kind of go in cycles. It's not like we're constantly going to be always every minute acting. And so there's a compassion towards oneself in recognizing that.
And that allows you to keep going, knowing that you'll have lulls and you'll have bursts.
Yes.
Great.
Right. Well, it's like the breath, right? You know, it's like your breath.
Yes.
There's an in-breath. There's a pause in the breath, and there's an out breath. And so there are times, you know, if you locate yourself in the breath, where am I in this moment in my breath? Is it an in breath? Am I in the space between the breath? Is it time for, you know, to exhale? Same thing with, you know, action and resting, to locate yourself within the breath, mm-hmm. of your action.
Well, we just have a couple more minutes before we're going to break into a legislative update, sort of on the more fact-focused aspect of our show. So it's a chance to go around for any last words anyone wants to contribute. So, Sharon, you just spoke. Let's give Claire a chance.
So I want to just build on what Claire and Carrie were saying about taking a step back, not to stop what we're doing, but to inform what we're doing with better perspective. Because I think this is coming at us like a tsunami right now, and it breeds a certain passivity in the sense that we become victims to all the things they're throwing at us, and we get distracted from our primary goals and our primary values. So taking time to breathe or do a practice, like we've mentioned, is absolutely crucial. And if Wise Words stands for anything, it would be, you know, to say as a reminder and as a, you know, that we will find more ways to interact with the actions that'll be helpful, but we also want to bring in wisdom for the ages, women's wisdom, the wisdom of the elders, the wisdom of the traditional cultures, and the wisdom of nature, and have the time and ability to interweave that just by paying attention to it, just by engaging with it and making a commitment to that. Because I'm really a little bit concerned that these new groups are going to be very energized and helpful, but I'm hoping that it forms a deeper commitment to change, that we have a lasting relationship to the things we're talking about, and it just doesn't become sort of a flash-in-the-pan type of reaction, but we learn to be responsible in what we do.
Right. As we say, we want a movement and not just a moment.
Exactly. Yeah. So, thanks. Mm-hmm.
So the voice you were just hearing was that of Claire Hope Cummings, the author of Uncertain Peril, Genetic Engineering and the Future of Seeds. Claire, we're going to sign off with you, but thank you so much for being on Post Carbon Radio again today.
Thank you.
Where should people go to follow your latest work, including Wise Words?
They can just actually go to my website. I'm going to post an article there about the study I did on these issues, and so it's clairehopecummings.com.
All right, great. Sharon, author of Passing for Normal, last words from you.
Last words from me. Oh, there's so many words. I have so enjoyed being in this conversation with all of you. It's just incredible. I just want to say that my favorite quote of the moment is something that I read online, which says, "This too shall pass. It may pass like a kidney stone, but it will pass."
That's great.
And as, you know, funny as it is, it's tough right now. It's really tough. But, you know, working together and staying aware and staying awake and keeping hope in our hearts and sparking some fire, we actually can move this to a new and better place. We just can't see it yet, but we can. There's that possibility.
Okay, and Sharon, how can people get in touch with you and follow your work?
Great. So the best way to find me is through my website, SharonWeilAuthor.com. And on there you can connect with the podcast, Passing for Normal, and my other books. Yeah, I think that's the best way.
Great, and that's Sharon Weil, W-E-I-L, author.com.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
We're going to cut off the phone so that... Sorry about that. Sometimes the phone system talks back. Carrie Nelson, author of One Small Difference, thank you for joining us today. How do people find you, your books, and your workshops, and follow you? You have an upcoming book talk, right?
Yeah. So you can go to placeforpeace.org. And, book talk is,
March 5th?
March 5th, Book Passage, Corte Madera.
What time?
1 o'clock.
All right. Thanks so much. We are going to say goodbye to our guests at this point with much appreciation and just give you a few resources. If you're interested in affinity groups, we recommend one place you can look is starhawk.org. If you're interested in direct action, a great resource for that is called organizingforpower.org. And in our last few minutes, we're going to give you a legislative update. There's a lot going on in the California Senate. Bing?
And now, for a brief legislative update from Sacramento regarding environmental protection of public lands, workers, and state environmental and scientific data in California.
Yeah, so the California legislature is considering several bills to protect, as Bing just said, land, the environment, and worker health and safety against the anticipated and some already announced rollbacks at the federal level by the Trump administration. There are four new bills introduced in the state Senate, and they are almost all in order, SB 49, 50, 51, and 54.
SB 49, introduced by Speaker Kevin DeLeon, is called the California Environmental Defense Act.
It makes current federal clean air, climate, clean water, worker safety, and endangered species standards enforceable under state law, even if the federal government rolls back and weakens those standards. And it directs the state agency employees to keep maintaining those standards.
And that's important because if you're the employee caught in the middle, you need some clear direction. All right. Moving on to Senate Bill 50, is introduced by Senator Ben Allen of Santa Monica. It's called the Public Lands Protection Act, and it would direct the California Lands Commission to discourage transfer of federal lands to private developers for resource extraction and give the state greater say in the Land Commission's oversight of federal land use. The state would first review and then discourage such land transfers by the federal government to private developers within California.
And SB 51, introduced by Senator Hannah Beth Jackson of Santa Barbara, is called the Whistleblower and Public Data Protection Act. If passed, it would ensure that government employees and contractors who reveal violations of the law, unethical actions, or dangers to public health and safety don't lose their license to work in California. It would also direct state environment and health agencies to protect their agencies' information and data, even if federal agencies direct them to censor or destroy it.
And finally, a little bit before these, California State President Pro Tem Kevin De Leon also introduced SB 54, which is called the California Values Act. And if that passed, it would prevent the use of state and local public resources to aid federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agents in deportation actions. So that kind of goes along with some of the actions that people have been taking at the local government level.
And finally, I'd like to announce that West Marin, Standing Together, is having a meeting on Saturday, March 4th at 3 p.m. at the Dance Palace. And you can contact me for more information. I'm Bing Gong, and my email is binggong@sonic.net.
And that does it for Post Carbon Radio this week. Join us again in 2 weeks. And meanwhile, stay tuned for Cruisin' with Rick Clark.
I'm trying to spread the word about this immense issue, but I find it absurd why so many people are confused. Some people don't understand the weight of this problem. Act now before it gets out of hand, cause Earth is calling. I was 10 years old, exposed to it. The inconvenient truth really made me concerned how it was going to affect the youth. The temp is still rising from the pollution we produce. We need to start striving for a solution to reduce. When we burn fossil fuels like coal and gasoline, we're using dirty energies when we should be using clean. When we burn, we're adding to the greenhouse effect. CO2, CH4, and N2O collect in our atmosphere. They remain up there for years and years, absorbing sun rays that come near. But we need to persevere, cause this makes our planet's temp rise fast. So why can't we find a way to cut back on our greenhouse gas? We have waited too long. Act now before the moment's gone. The situation's tough, but stay strong until we see the dawn. The climate's on my mind.